Medical Frontiers is an information program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnoses, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.
Well, good evening. Dr. Gerald Pfeiffer here on Medical Frontiers. A beautiful, beautiful evening in the Berg. It'd just be great if we could have every day like this, 365 days out of the year. It would be fantastic. Not too high humidity in the 80s. Just great. I think everyone feels better when we have weather like today. Medical Frontiers tonight, we're talking about sleep disorders. We're going to find out what that means. And this is a subject we do about once a year, and we always get a lot of calls about sleep disorders because it's a pretty common thing, either sleeping too much or not sleeping enough. And we want to get that dead center where it's just the right amount of sleep, and I think everyone would feel better. So tonight, sleep disorders on Medical Frontiers. Give us a call at 866-391-1020. We have two guests in the studio this evening, and by the way, this is the Allegheny Health Network studio here at KDK, and none other than Dr. Daniel Shade. I always thought that Shade is a very, very nice name for somebody who is involved with sleep. It's like better than a Dr. Savage, who's a dentist, or Dr. Chips, or what have you. We did have a Dr. Hart at Allegheny General for a while. Yeah, Neil Hart. Yeah,
I remember.
Took care of the heart. Right. But welcome back to Medical Frontiers, Dr. Shade.
Thank you.
It's good seeing you. And sleep disorders. And by the way, to our listening audience out there, Dr. Shade is the director of the Center for Sleep Medicine at Allegheny Health Network. And sleep disorders. You're a pulmonologist, a lung guy. What about sleep?
Well, it's a huge topic. Mm-hmm. And as you said in the intro, it's, you know, the issues are you sleeping too much? Or are you not sleeping enough? And that encompasses many different disorders, from sleep apnea to shift work disorder to narcolepsy, insomnia. What we do know is that we should spend about a third of our life sleeping if we sleep roughly 8 hours a night, which we should, and we don't do. And we know that when we don't get that, bad things can happen to us.
Are there some people that just require less sleep?
There are a few, and everybody claims that, especially in our field. You know, as a physician or a professional, you always say, oh, I can get by on 4 hours. But the reality is that genetically, there's probably only about 1% of the population that truly can get by with 4 or 5 hours. Most of us need 6, 7, 8.
Yeah, okay. And the problem is that something you spoke about sleep apnea, and sometimes people don't understand that they're not getting enough sleep. They think right. that they're having a good night's sleep, but they really aren't. And explain that.
That's a great point. The problem is that if, for example, you have sleep apnea, you don't know that you may be waking up 100 times an hour with an apneic event. That is where you kind of stop breathing at night and have a little awakening. Not enough that you know. It's more of a, almost like when the phone rings once and it wakes you up a little bit, but you kind of go back to sleep. I would use that as an example. And this could be going on many, many times an hour, and you don't realize it. And that's the dangerous thing. So you get a lot of denial. Oh, I snore. There's no way I have sleep apnea.
Yeah, right.
But you could.
Yeah. And that is actually kind of frightening when you think that you stop breathing, and then you wake up, your
right.
COT level gets high enough that it wakes you up, and you have to take a breath, or you're going to die. And so that's frightening.
And that's your body's way of, you know, it sends off this adrenaline, this flight or fight hormone to say, oh no, our oxygen's dropping, we're not breathing, we better wake you up. And it's a tremendous shock to the system because adrenaline, that flight or fight hormone, is going to raise your sugars and your blood pressure and your heart rate.
Right. And may cause heart arrhythmias and maybe other heart diseases.
Absolutely.
That type of thing, yeah. Okay, well, we're going to be talking all about those sort of things. We have another guest in the studio, none other than Rachel Falzone. And is that the way you pronounce your name, Falzone?
Falzone.
Falzone? Oh,
either way.
Okay, that E has to be, is that Italian?
It is.
Okay. So there ought to be some kind of mark on that E, you know, that so that we know that it's Falsoni. Right? Yeah. Okay. Dr. Falsoni, we will do the Italian way. Okay. Right. And Rachel is, she actually grew up in Cleveland. We're not going to hold that against her because she is not a Cleveland Browns fan. She's a Cavs fan, but that's okay because we don't have a NBA team here in Pittsburgh, but welcome to Medical Frontiers.
Thank you.
Okay, Rachel. And Rachel is a nurse. She is a certified registered nurse practitioner. We're going to talk a bit about that. What does that mean? And she is working with the insomnia program, part of the AHN and sleep disorder effort through Allegheny General Hospital, part of the Allegheny Health Network. And welcome to Medical Frontiers. Welcome to Pittsburgh, and and all that. And please, I hope your fiance finds a position here in Pittsburgh so we can keep you. Right, Dr. Shade?
I agree.
Okay,
we're working on it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, Rachel, tell us a little bit about your background. You are a nurse practitioner, and tell us a little bit about what your training was and where, and then how you became interested in sleep disorders.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started as an RN at the Cleveland Clinic on a medical surgical telemetry floor. I actually became interested in pulmonary conditions. So when I started my career as a nurse practitioner, my goal was to get a pulmonary nurse practitioner position. Along with that came sleep medicine. So I took the opportunity and actually found I was more interested in sleep medicine. So I've now geared my training and profession towards sleep medicine.
Okay. Well, very good. And what is your role with the sleep medicine effort at AHN? What do you actually do?
So we all work as a team, see conditions including sleep apnea, narcolepsy, idiopathic hypersomnolence. I found a special interest in insomnia, so I've started a cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia program, which really looks at thoughts and behaviors surrounding difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep. So we have that, along with medications and other adjunctive therapy to treat insomnia.
Are there as many people who have trouble getting to sleep and sleeping as long as they should, as well as people who sleep too much? Are there more in which category? Or is it about even? Rachel?
Probably more that don't sleep enough, that have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep compared to sleeping too much.
Okay, great. Okay, we need to take a break. This is Medical Frontiers. We're talking about sleep disorders. Give us a call if you have narcolepsy, if you have sleep apnea, if you have insomnia, whatever. We can answer your questions tonight. So give us a call at 866-391-1020. That also is the Wright Automotive text line, so you can text us at that number, 866-391-1020. You can email us at the Dollar Bank Instant Access at kdkradio.com. And you can also reach us by phone, 866-391-1020. We'll be back. We're back on Medical Frontiers. We're talking about sleep disorders, and we have a couple lines available, 866-391-1020. Let's go to Arlene on line one, East Liberty. Arlene, you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening. My question, it might be two-part question, but the first part is, I am 65 years old, and I have been diagnosed with sleep apnea. And what I'm trying to figure out, when I go to sleep, it feels like my heart is racing, then it slows down, like it slows down. And when I go to sleep, I'll sleep a while, I wake up, and then I'm wide awake, and I'm just laying there. My eyes are closed, and I feel like I'm not sleeping because I can hear everything, and I'm just, like, laying there. So what my question is, am I waking up because I'm not getting enough oxygen to stay asleep, or what's going on? Because when I wake up, I'm wide awake, and I really, you know, I'm just laying there. So am I sleeping at all or not?
Okay, well, we're going to have Dr. Chade take a crack at that. And our sometimes specific advice is very, very difficult to give to an individual listener because we don't have all the information, you know. If you had a sleep study, we don't know the values and all that. But Dr. Shade, how about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting.
When I wake up, I'm yawning. I'm just yawning like I never slept. I'm just yawning when I wake up or whatever. So am I sleeping at all, or I'm just resting?
Well, it's hard to say. Certainly there are cases when patients have been treated with CPAP for sleep apnea, and the pressures could be too high, in which case it's not helping you as much, or too low, too high or too low, where it could be awakening you or not helping you with respect to your apnea. The only way to really tell if you're asleep or not would be to undergo a sleep study and make sure we know where the oxygen is and are you going into the stages of sleep that you need to do. Is there something else that's waking you up? There are other sleep disorders besides sleep apnea that can cause you to have arousals and not sleep well. You know, medical conditions, medications can do that too. So usually in a case like this with this question, there are a lot of different sides to it. It's probably best to see your physician or a sleep physician.
Yeah, well, my doctor told me, that I need to have in the hospital sleep study too. Because I was thinking, I don't need to take a sleep aid to sleep, do I? Like melatonin or whatever, something like that? No, don't take anything to sleep, or just let the sleep come natural.
It's always best to try to let it come natural, but again, I think an evaluation with somebody who knows your sleep history can answer that question better in a safer manner for you.
Since you have not had a sleep study, I think that would be the most important thing to do, right, Dr.
Yes,
Faye?
Yes, I did.
Absolutely.
I've had an at-home sleep study, but I have to go into the hospital and schedule one inside the hospital. Yeah, I have to go and have one overnight sleep study through the hospital.
Right.
I have to go have that done.
And that would give us more information. We'd actually know exactly how you're sleeping and what stages you're in. So it's probably a little bit better in your case.
But the question that you, another part you were saying, like your heart can stop or something, but if the heart does stop, it restarts itself, don't it? It won't stay stopped. Well, if it did stop, it restarts itself?
It just might be slowing down. It probably doesn't stop completely. But that we could see that in the sleep lab, too. We'll monitor your heart rate and everything as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Arlene, thank you so much for the call, and get that sleep study. Okay, let's go to Doug in South Jersey.
Hey,
good evening,
Doc.
Doug.
How you doing? My name is Doug Sittel, Sittel on Google. I had a gentleman make a comment. I don't even treat you for the flu at the hospital. My YouTube uploads 8.
I tell you, we're really having trouble with the communication. It's cracking up, and so we're going to go to Ron in Pittsburgh. Good evening, Ron.
Hello.
Hello, Ron. You're on Medical Frontiers. Good evening.
Good evening. I wanted to talk to the doctor about or the nurse about AHI numbers and how people, even though they're sleeping with a BiPAP or a CPAP, it's not 100% foolproof because you can still experience that waking up feeling, depending on your condition. And I just wanted to, I am that 1% that cannot get more than 4.5-5 hours of sleep. If I do get that much sleep, I'm miserable. Four and a half, 5 hours of sleep, and then I function perfectly well all day long, until I get to bed. But AHI numbers, what I'd like to know, if someone can answer my question, is I know zero is probably the best, but what number do you want to stay under as a goal?
Okay. Do you want to take that, Dr. Shade?
Sure. Yeah. The number in this, what the AHI is an apnea hypopnea index. That's how many times your airway completely collapses based on a sleep study, or partially collapses. That's a hypopnea per hour. And the normal number that had been chosen years ago is 5 an hour. Now, there's a lot of variability in that even night to night, you may have 8, and that doesn't mean much, and you might have 3 the next night. So it's on average the number that counts. What we do worry about are when the numbers get really high. Certainly anything above 5 we consider abnormal in the general population, but it's the higher the number, the worse. And what we don't want to do is have patients that are worried about 3s and 6s and 4s and stuff like that. You don't want to hang on one number too much, if that helps you a little bit.
Does that help?
It does, but you're talking about 5 as in like 5.0, right? Not 0.5.
Five per hour.
Correct. Right.
Right. Okay. So if I told you that I had a sleep apnea AHI number of 0.7 or 0.9 or 0.4, that would be pretty good.
If we're talking AHI, yes. Right. That's a very low number. Yeah.
Yeah. Because all of those are below one.
Right. Yeah. There could be other, if you're still sleepy, there could be other reasons, though, that you're sleepy that have nothing to do with sleep disordered breathing or sleep apnea.
No, I mean, what I'm trying to get at is, like, I'll hit that, like, 0.4 or 0.5 or 0.6 number, like, a lot of times. Then there'll be one night I hit 1.7, which is still way above or way below the norm. But I feel 10 times worse when I hit that number than if I am at 0.6 or 0.7.
Okay.
And I'm still well, real low. So that AHI number, I would assume, is just a guide on an individual basis, or is that it's across the board?
It's made for a general population, but your individual number is going to vary, and you'll kind of know where your normal range is. Just remember that number doesn't mean that you were sleeping well. You know, you could have only slept 2 hours that night, and the next night you slept 8 hours and felt better, and the index was the same. So it doesn't tell you the amount of sleep you're getting or the quality of sleep. It just tells you how many events you're having.
Okay, Ron.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Fred in South Hills. Okay. Good evening, Fred.
Hi. Good evening, doctors. Question. I thought I read once that a lack of sleep, and I can't remember if it affects the white blood cells, whether they go up or down. Can you confirm that?
How about that, Dr. Shade?
Does the lack of sleep affect the white blood cells?
Okay.
There are some data on that. Yes, it can. That's chronic sleep deprivation, that is sleeping less than 6 hours, really less than 4 hours for an extended period of time, can affect your white blood cell count and also cells called your natural killer cells, which hunt for cancer in your body, and a bunch of other metabolic and cellular processes besides, you know, memory and stuff like that. So it definitely can affect your immune system by decreasing your, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, doctor.
Okay. Thank you for the call. So, Dr. Shade, it sounds like we need proper sleep, because it affects a lot of systems in our human body, right?
It affects almost every system.
So, what about, you know, how about lower animals and so on? I mean, is there any data to show that they also have sleep problems and so on?
They do. I mean, every animal that's been studied, when we go back down through mammals to birds, have sleep cycles that we recognize, REM and non-REM, rapid eye movement sleep and non-rapid eye. And when you get below that, even at the cellular level, there's not sleep, but there are periods of inactivity and activity, even in bacteria, where, you know, cellular functions are increased and not. So definitely everything that we've ever studied has a sleep cycle or a period of inactivity. So it's very, from an evolutionary point of view, it's got to be important if everything does it.
Yeah. And we were going to talk about this a little later, perhaps, you know, but if we have the time, and that is doing shift work, that type of thing, and interrupting your sleep patterns, you know, by, you know, working the, you know, 12-hour days, 16-hour day, what have you.
Right. Increased risk of cancer, and Rachel can certainly speak to that as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're not going to take a call right now, but give us a call at 866-391-1020, and that's also how you can text us on the Wright Automotive Group line, 866-391-1020. You can email us on the Dollar Bank Instant Access at kdkradio.com. Next week, we're going to be talking about pediatric care, but tonight it is about sleep disorders. So give us a call, 866-391-1020. We have Dr. Shade here. He's an MD. He's a pulmonologist, and he is actually the director of the sleep disorder clinic at AHN. And we also have Rachel Falsoni, who is also here. She's a nurse practitioner. So give us a call, 866-391-1020, and we'll be back.
The following program is paid for by the Allegheny Health Network.
Here we're back on Medical Frontiers here with Dr. Shade and Rachel Falsoni, and we're talking about sleep disorders tonight. So give us a call, 866-391-1020. Let's go to Pam in North Hills as our first caller on this segment.
Oh, good evening, doctors.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You have a question?
Hey, good evening. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I consider myself to be a pretty healthy woman at age 61. However, I have a lot of trouble falling asleep. So I take either Benadryl or Ambien. But what I'm noticing is that I no longer dream. And I wanted to hear from one of the doctors, Dr. Shade or the nurse practitioner, their opinion on not dreaming.
Okay, well, how about that, Rachel? There are some people who say they never dream at all. I dream every night. I also sometimes can dream about things I want to dream about. That's called, what is that, dream logic or something like that? But, but Rachel, how about that? Do most people dream and then they forget about it or not?
That is true. Most people dream and are maybe unaware of it. However, certain medications can also decrease the amount of REM sleep that you get, so you may not actually be dreaming as much as a normal person getting normal sleep architecture.
Because you do more dreaming in REM.
Okay. And how about...
Would that be Ambien that could decrease that normal sleep architecture?
Yes, it can.
Okay. It can. So it can affect your dream time?
Exactly.
Okay. Dr. Shea?
Just remember that a lot of the medications you use that help you sleep, just like anesthetics and pain medications, might put you to sleep, but it's not real sleep. You know, you're in a state of of repose, but it's not, you're not going through all the cycles that you would normally do.
You're unconscious, but it's because of a different, it's not natural.
Right.
Okay.
So do you think a person such as myself could benefit from sleep hygiene or a sleep clinic to help address ways to sleep without having to take medication for it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just working on little things in terms of getting a good bedtime routine, avoiding the blue light stimulation prior to bed, keeping a consistent bedtime and wake time can absolutely improve and induce natural sleep without medications.
Okay.
Okay. And, one final question off of that subject. I understand that obstructive sleep apnea can lead to pulmonary hypertension. Could that be expounded upon briefly?
Dr. Shea,
what that is?
Pulmonary hypertension, what is it?
Sure. Pulmonary hypertension is a condition where a patient would have just what it sounds like, high blood pressure in the pulmonary circuit, in the arteries that lead off from the heart and supply the lungs. And the problem with that is that can cause the heart to start to fail over time. Sleep apnea is one condition out of many, many conditions that can cause pulmonary hypertension. And part of it may be due to the low oxygen levels that you have in untreated sleep apnea that keeps cycling through the night. That can cause the vessels in your lungs to clamp down a bit, and that's pulmonary hypertension.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so very much.
Okay. Bye. Thanks for the call, Pam. Appreciate it. I just received a text from a listener, Edward. And Edward informed me that the word I was looking for was lucid dreaming, not logic dreaming, lucid dreaming. And I thank you, Edward, for that text. I appreciate that. Okay, let's go to Rich in Penn Hills. Good evening, Rich. You're on Medical Frontiers.
Thank you for taking my call, doctors. Appreciate it. Question. I have some nighttime frequency of urination and probably get up about 3 times a night, so I'm probably getting at least 2 hours at a time, and I do fall back asleep pretty quickly, and I sleep probably about 7 to 8 hours a night. What are the odds or chances that I'm going through all the stages of sleep?
Okay, Rachel, how about that? There are interruptions for a number of reasons. Sometimes you have to get up to, you know, relieve your bladder. Sometimes, you know, if you're in the medical profession, you might get some phone calls 3 or 4 a night, and those are interruptions. But most of the time, people can go back to sleep right away, but those are interruptions. Are those things that we should be concerned about in getting enough sleep?
So typically, I mean, the average sleep cycle varies per person and does depend on age. However, normal time to get through a full sleep cycle and into REM would be about...
Oh, about 60 to 90 minutes.
Okay.
And typically you'll have 3 or 4 of those in a night on average if you're getting a total of 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night.
So as long as you have an hour and a half of sleep in between those intervals, you should be okay? Is that what we're saying?
It is. You know, what we found, though, is that you really do need to have all these cycles. You get more REM later in the night. And so if you only sleep 6 hours and you're not getting those last two REM periods, for example, we found that that's important. There's something about having to cycle through these in a manner that you're supposed to.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Is there a problem if you're leaving a radio on very low volume at night? It helps me sleep.
Well, there probably isn't anything wrong with that as long as it's tuned to KDKA. No. What do you think? How about that for a plug? Okay, what do you think, Rachel?
No, so for background noise, sometimes that does help people sleep. And I mean, a sound machine with certain waveforms, there have been proven to actually increase the deep sleep that you get. So that may be a better alternative. But really, a radio in the background should not be disruptive to your sleep as long as it's not a TV with the changing lights.
Okay. We call that white noise, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of interesting. There was a time in Buffalo, New York, Niagara Falls, where the falls froze. And actually, there was not the roar. And everybody in Niagara Falls woke up. During the Second World War, during the bombings of London, when the bombing stopped, people woke up. They slept right through the bombings, but when there was a ceasefire and there were no more bombings, mm-hmm. they woke up.
Interesting.
So it's kind of interesting that the human can actually make those types of changes, you know, and you don't even have to think about it. You know, the noise stopped, you wake up.
Right.
You're like crazy. Okay. Let's go to Rick in Beaver Falls. Okay. Oh. Rick, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. How are you tonight? I had a couple questions. I don't sleep at night, but I wanted to ask, my sister was recently diagnosed with narcolepsy and I wrote these words down, so excuse me, cataplexy, and she was given a prescription of armodafinil. And I just wondered if that's harmful, like speed, if that's going to hurt her long term. Very concerned about her.
Okay. Okay, Dr. Shade, what about that?
Narcolepsy, I think, is what, you know, that's a serious condition that needs to be treated. And if she needs that medication, that's also called Nuvigil or Armodafinil, then she needs it to maintain, peak performance in the daytime, not to fall asleep inappropriately. I'm not sure what kind of work she does, but she has to drive and all that. So definitely if a doctor has prescribed it, they have a good reason for it. And narcolepsy is a tough condition to treat and a serious condition. So it sounds like she's getting care, which is good.
It is. I mean, she's a nurse. Bridget's my younger sister, and she's a nurse. And yeah, but she does well on it. But I personally listened to the caller a few minutes ago, and I have trouble sleeping. I wondered a couple things. I feel like I have thoughts all night long, but I don't know if I'm actually dreaming, and I wondered if I am dreaming. And then, is that melanin and NyQuil to take at night, is that bad? Will that be bad for me whenever I can't sleep?
Rachel?
Are you asking about the combination of melatonin and NyQuil?
Yes.
Okay. So I wouldn't advise taking two different sedatives at night. However, melatonin about 2 hours prior to bed can help to regulate your sleep cycle. So I'd recommend that independently before adding another medication. And if you do need another medication, you should talk with your doctor about it before adding to take two medications in combination to help you get good sleep.
Well, I actually was looking to see someone, but I just heard at the beginning that I guess there's someone new coming over there. You won't be there. And so Dr. Shade?
No,
we
don't know whether Rachel's going to leave or not. You know, she just has to convince her fiancé to get a job here in Pittsburgh. That's all. So if you have any openings, you know.
That's right.
Okay, Dr. Shade?
Yeah, be more than happy to see you.
Okay.
All right. Hey, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, you bet. And you can make an appointment with the doctors at Allegheny Health Network by going to AHN.org or 412-DOCTORS. That is very easy to make an appointment, and we have facilities all across the tri-state area, so shouldn't be any problem getting an appointment. That is Medical Frontiers. We're going to be taking a break, and we'll be back. Hey, we're back on Medical Frontiers talking about sleep disorders. A couple lines available. Give us a call, 866-391-1020. Okay, let's go to the first one from Where is that? I can't quite read that first. Barry, from Hanover, is it?
Honker.
Honker, okay.
Honker,
H-O-N-K-E-R, right? Okay, where is Honker?
Honker is by New Stanton, Pennsylvania, right off the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
Okay, there you go. Okay, so you're central part of the state. Okay, what's your question?
Well, we're actually 30 miles from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, New Stanton. Yeah, I was thinking of Breezewood. Yeah. Okay, New Stanton. Okay.
That's okay, brother.
Okay, what's your question? Yeah.
Me and my wife both have sleep apnea. My wife faithfully uses her machine for the last 20 years.
Okay.
I couldn't stand to wear the mask, so I got an oral appliance. And when they tested me with my oral appliance, they said I needed to sleep on my right side. Did you ever hear anything like that I needed to sleep on my right side to get the proper amount of sleep?
Who told you that, Barry?
Sleep technician.
They sleep on your right
Side.
What do you think, Rachel? Is it better to sleep on your right side?
So not necessarily. Probably what they found is with your oral appliance, it was most effective in controlling your sleep apnea when you were sleeping on your right side. Typically, when you sleep on your back, sleep apnea is where it's just the component of gravity that works against you as well. So your oral appliance is most effective in treating your sleep apnea while you're sleeping on your right side, per the sleep study. However, it truly might be either side, depending on how much sleep you truly slept in each position that the night of one sleep study.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
Okay.
One more question.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Masks. If they had any new technology for masks, I may decide to go back to the sleep apnea machine.
Okay. Dr. Shade?
There are many new things coming out on the horizon. There are actually 3D printing, and even there are different places that are studying and trying to come up with individual masks for patients. So they'll take your face shape, your facial shape, and make a mask just for you. And so that's on the horizon, not too far away. And that would be much more comfortable for most people. So that's exciting.
It's amazing the technology, how far it's advanced.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I get. Just need everybody to think they have sleep apnea and need to get tested because it's definitely worthwhile.
Okay.
Very good.
Thank you for that.
Appreciate it.
Okay. And good luck to both you and your wife with your sleep apnea. Let's go to Ellen in Forest Hills on line two. Ellen, you're on the air.
Hi. I can't sleep at night unless I have the radio on. And, of course, I have KDKA on.
All right.
And here's what's really odd. I sleep with my watch on. And I have a clock radio. As if the electricity ever goes out, which you know it does around here, as soon as the electricity goes out, I wake up because I'll check my watch and I'll get a flashlight and I'll check the clock radio. So I'm not the only one. I heard that fella call,
yeah.
And he said he had to have the radio on all the time.
Yeah. Okay. And, well, I guess that we're all individuals, right, Rachel? And what works for one may not work for another. We're told that we should not use a computer right before going to sleep, or our iPhone, or exercise strenuously, you know, right before you go to sleep or try to go to sleep and so on. Those are all, I guess, good advice, right, Rachel?
They are, and more so if you already have a component of insomnia or trouble falling asleep, then they would really need to be implemented more so than if you're a good sleeper.
Okay.
Well, you know, my mother and dad, they slept with Perry Marshall on the radio all night long.
I remember Perry.
So I picked that up one from them.
You must have.
Yeah, well, it's just the way you were brought up. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Ellen, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Sean in North Hills, line three. Thank you, Sean, for calling in. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. Thank you, doctors, for taking my call. And I wanted to say before I ask my question that I really enjoy your program, and it's, boy, you really give a lot of great advice and information. So keep up the good work.
Well, we thank you for that. What's your question?
You're welcome. My question is, I'm 60 years old, and I do have trouble sleeping most nights. And it seems like I can initially fall asleep, but you know, maybe like an hour and a half later, I'll wake up, and then I have a tough time falling back to sleep. You know, I might be up like 2 hours, And then, you know, usually, hopefully I do fall back, back to sleep, but it's frustrating in that, I really lose a lot of rest that I know I should be, gaining. So I probably get on an average of maybe like five and a half hours of sleep a night. And then just to say, too, that about eight years ago, I did have a sleep test, and I was diagnosed with having a restless leg, syndrome to a certain extent. And but other than that, no sleep apnea. And then and then 2 years ago, at age 58, I started my own business. And that year in particular, I mean, I really had trouble sleeping just because of all the, everything that was involved in starting the business and everything. So fortunately, the business has died down some, and I'm getting more rest than I did 2 years ago, but I know that I should still get more rest than I'm getting.
Okay, Dr. Shade, any suggestions?
I guess it depends on what might be waking you up. Certainly, if you have restless limb syndrome, that usually prevents you from falling asleep. It's good that you didn't have sleep apnea on the initial test, but we definitely would want to ask some more questions of you. Again, look at your medications and your health history and kind of figure out if there's something we can pinpoint as to why you're getting non-restorative sleep, why you might be waking up, because you really would like to get 7 hours.
But somebody should have an evaluation, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Does that make sense to you, Sean?
It does, and really, at this point, I'm on no medications at all.
Good.
I've been very fortunate through my life, and really, I'm not on anything. The only thing that I take sometimes at night would be it's just a supplement.
Okay. Well, you could get an appointment at 412 Doctors and be evaluated. I'm sure they could help you out. Okay.
All right. Very good. Hey, thanks
okay.
very much.
Appreciate all right. Let's go to Mark in Pittsburgh. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Doctor. How are you doing?
Hey, real quick, we're running out of time. Yeah, what's your question?
All right, real quick here. I'm a doctor. I'm sorry. I'm a patient of Dr. Shades there.
Okay.
At the Sleep Institute there.
Okay.
And I had a question about weight. What does that have to do with sleep apnea?
Okay.
I'm not a large person, but I am a little overweight. If he could talk about that, and I had one more question. If
we have time. Okay, Dr. Shade, what about obesity?
Sure. Obesity is one of the major risk factors for sleep apnea, but just because the weight can press on your neck and your upper airway and reduce your lung volume. But 30% of people with sleep apnea are completely normal in size, which means there's another factor, and that can be anatomic, the way your airway is shaped, or it can just be the way the muscles respond. Sometimes they don't respond as well as you want, and that can lead to sleep apnea.
Okay, real quick, your other question?
My father, he's a heart patient down at AGH, referred by Dr. Fasani. I was referred by Fasani to Dr.
Okay, real quick, we're running out of time.
If you could tell me, he has nosebleeds in the wintertime when the humidity is real low. Would a CPAP machine help him at all?
Okay, Dr. Shade.
It wouldn't help the nosebleeds. You definitely would have to use humidification, and he's probably on a blood thinner with the heart disease, so that could be contributing.
Okay, thank you very much, and good luck to you. Okay, well, I want to thank both of you for being here, Dr. Shade and Rachel.
Thank you.
I told you the time would go fast. It really has, hasn't it? And so the main thing is I think that if you have some disturbance in your sleep, talk to your primary care physician and possibly need a referral. Okay, Medical Frontiers, we're saying good night. We'll be back in a week.
Medical Frontiers is an information program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnoses, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.